With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Joining us here on the show is a good friend of mine. Does a wonderful job covering the New England Patriots. Did so for a number of years for Comcast SportsNet New England / NBC Sports Boston, now for the NFL Network and NFL Media, my friend Mike Giardi. Mike, good morning and happy 2019.
Same to you. That was a very touching intro right there. I'm tearing up a little bit.
Well, I did that so that I could get you to bash somebody else. If you had to air your grievances about the Boston media, now that you're on the outside, you're a national media guy like me, what might you say if you were to air your grievances?
Far too protective of some of the people and the of the athletes and the coaches that they cover. Far too protective.
Would that include Tom Brady?
Yes, he would fall into that category for sure.
Okay, very good. This sets up well. So I want to know if you checked out Mike Tanier's piece at Bleacher Report about the next-gen stats of Tom Brady at this point in his career yesterday.
I did.
Okay, so I kind of used this as a preface to bring you on. Last segment, we went over some of these, but just to reset here, average pass attempt yardage, pass completion yardage on field distance, intended air yards, third downs and four, third downs and short, all this stuff basically put him at in the 20s on most rankings. And on third and four, his completion percentage is down to 50%. Just 2 years ago, it was 65. This year, the league rate was about 59. So by all metrics, he's down in all of this. Do you assign most of the responsibility of that to Brady's age and diminished abilities or lack of big play weapons surrounding him?
I would lean more to the lack of big play weapons surrounding him, and not that I don't want to get caught in the trap of, it's just the weapons. It's just the weapons, because that's one of the defenses of Brady. And I don't think that that's fair, because I think we've seen over the course of time, he's elevated players around him when he's playing well, regardless of their pedigree. But I do think that's part of it, because I think they came into this year and said, we still believe Rob Gronkowski has another 1 or 2 years of very good football left in him. Well, he played one really good game. That was the season opener. Then he got hurt. And while he's come back and had a couple games of fits and starts, he hasn't been the same guy. So right off the bat, you take away maybe the most uncoverable weapon in the National Football League. Losing Amendola was a big deal, and I'd say took Edelman better part of the season, even though his numbers look pretty good, to start looking like Edelman again. So that was part of it as well. And then to go back though to the quarterback, he got hurt against Tennessee. It's for some reason, here's another one. For some reason, no one wants to admit that the injury was real and the injury lingered. Which baffles my mind, because if you're a Pats fan, I think you'd be looking at it and saying, well, we really hope that he's hurt, because we haven't seen him do some of the stuff that he's doing since that game, maybe ever. And if it's not injury, then what is it, you know? But to me, and I reported it, he was injured against Tennessee. That injury lingered. It may be to the point, and I was told it was a 4 to 6 week injury. It may be to the point where in that Jets game in the finale, you finally saw him look like himself. But boy, there was a stretch there where he was doing things, DA, that you were here for a while. He was doing things that, I've seen every pass he's ever thrown as a professional. I've covered him the entire time, and he did stuff I've never seen before.
So this is interesting, going back to your original point about being protective about certain sacred cows in Boston. Boston is an amazing city for many reasons. One of them is that everybody seems to protect everybody else, and there's this incredible sense of unity, and we're in this together. The Boston Marathon bombing really brought that to a national light. I mean, there's just no other metropolitan major areas in the United States that would shut down to find the guy. It was like, everybody shut down, we're finding the guy. And they did. But in this case, it also, I think, deludes reality about Tom Brady. If you say anything critical, it becomes your clickbait or your hot taking or you're looking for attention. So how real in your mind, as an unbiased observer, is the diminished Brady age thing versus people kind of trying to avoid the reality within Boston as Patriots fans and media?
Well, so look, because of the injury to the left knee, he didn't move in the pocket like he has in the past, like he certainly did last year when he was MVP. And you could argue maybe the year before he was even better than the year that he won the MVP. And one of the things that he had worked on was pocket movement. And you're saying, man, that guy is probably moving better at 40 than he did when he was 30. You didn't see that over the last 6 weeks of the season, with the exception of one play against the Jets where he rolls out and hits Philip Dorsett for the touchdown in the finale. But to me, the arm is still close. Maybe it's a tick below what it used to be, but he still makes the throws that he's made his living on within that 15 to 20 yard area. He can still drive the ball to the deep outer third on the comeback route as well as, or as close to as he's ever had has. So I don't know that it's just that he's getting old, but I just think the one thing, again, I go back to is, you know, at times it looked like he lost his nerve in the pocket. And like I said, you better ascribe that to injury, because if you're losing your nerve and it's not because of injury, then, well, what is it? Self-preservation? And self-preservation against the Pittsburgh Steelers, when the game is on the line and you're on the 20-yard line and you're flopping and fading away from throws and giving yourself essentially no chance to complete them, makes no sense to me. That's not the time where you self-preserve. That's the time where the guy that we know would stand in the pocket and when he'd deliver those throws and take a shot to the chin or take a shot to the hip or whatever, because it matters. You want to not do it in the second quarter against the Miami Dolphins in week whatever, 12? That I get. That's live to play another day. But when it's fourth quarter, 20 seconds left, you're trying to tie the Pittsburgh Steelers, that's when you stand in there and do it, and he didn't do it. So that's where, again, if you're a Patriots fan, supporter, you got to look at that and say, man, I really hope that's because he's hurt and he just can't afford to take a hit there, as opposed to, I don't like the way this is going. I'm just going to fling it up there, because that's not who he's been for the better part of his career.
And that's a really good point. Mike Giardi joins us from the NFL Network. The one thing the Chargers bring to the table is a pass rush. And Melvin Ingram and Bosa and the rest of those guys, they're going to collapse the pocket. If they get after Brady, is this a specifically bad matchup because of those things that you're just mentioning?
Well, what I think you're going to see is that they're going to try to get it out quick. And actually, again, you were here, you watched it. When he's at his best, when Brady's at his best, that ball's coming out in 2.5 seconds or less. And that's exactly what you need to do against Bosa and Ingram and some of the other guys up front that create problems. And last year when they played the Chargers, everything was getting out quick. Then they would take their shots with Gronk, and he made some plays in the seam. Obviously, I think they're hoping that Gronk will give them a couple plays down the seam again to sort of loosen them up so he can come back underneath. He completed, I believe, last year in their Week 8 game, 14 of 15 to running backs. And it was all checkdowns, flares. I think there was one play where he bought some time, scrambled, and James White turned it up, and he made a longer play out of that. But by and large, when you attack cover three, Brady's had great success against cover three, and that's what base defense that the Chargers run. It's working the underneath stuff. And that, to me, that's always been where he's been at his best. Tom Brady has, to me, made his money throwing the short, quick stuff, getting in rhythm, getting some tempo going, and I think that's the way you beat the Chargers. I mean, the Chargers have basically decided to become a team that plays three, and as you saw last week, four safeties and seven defensive backs, in part because their linebackers are hurt or not very good. And now, you know, if you're doing that quickly, you're going to put a little stress on them because those guys, while they have been up there and played some snaps as linebackers, they're not linebackers, and their reaction time is going to be a little bit different.
Give me your read on Josh McDaniels, because a year ago, we all assumed he backed out of the Colts job because he was promised the Patriots head coaching job. And now a year later, at the very least, we saw that he was interested in the Packers job. So it seemed like, okay, well, maybe he wasn't promised then the Patriots head coaching job. What do you think changed within the year for McDaniels, and where do you think he fits long-term for the Patriots?
Well, now you remember, they insist that there was no wink, wink, nod, nod.
Right.
Whether you believe that or not is another story unto itself. I think Josh,
I've heard there are some things that the Patriots say that they don't mean. I've heard that. I'm not sure about that.
It has happened once or twice over the course of time. I think he wanted Cleveland. And I think the surprise, surprise is Cleveland didn't want him. And that to me was the fallout from last year. And I don't think there's any question people can work themselves up again. Some of the media here can work themselves up into a lather about why, no, that didn't make sense, and it wouldn't know. He's still a great coach, and I'm not denying any of that stuff, but he wanted Cleveland. It ended up in his hometown paper in Ohio, where his family still resides, that he's very interested in Cleveland. Well, where did that come from? That came from, I'm quite certain, came from Josh's father. He wanted in. They didn't want him, and that's, to me, completely related to the Colts and walking away from them at the 11th hour, you know, the day before the press conference, and that there is some residual from that, and that he's going to have to, I don't know, maybe it's just time that's going to take that away, but that certainly was a surprise to me that the hometown boy with the bright offensive mind couldn't even get an interview with Cleveland and that up-and-coming job.
Okay, so your read is that he was never guaranteed to succeed Belichick, and if he wants to go out and become a head coach again, he would pursue jobs that he would want, like the Cleveland job. So what do you think then was the reason, I hope I'm not putting words in your mouth, but what do you think then the reason is that he backed out of that Colts job?
Well, I think when it comes to the Patriots job, I don't know that everybody know. I don't know that Josh or anyone else knows the timetable for Bill Belichick. And I don't. And clearly, the Krafts, you can say, hey, you wink, wink, nod, nod. You're the next guy. You're the front runner to be the next guy. Well, if Bill wants to coach till he's 70 or 71, it's another 4 years, 5 years. Does Josh want to hang around for 4 or 5 more years? And then be all of a sudden go from the hot young coaching commodity to being in his late 40s? And having tasted another head coaching job since he was 32 years old with Denver, I think that's one of those things where even if there is a wink, wink, nod, nod, if Bill hasn't decided when he's going to go, or maybe Bill got energized again this year and said, I'm not even close to being done, then Josh has to look around, because I don't think you want to sit here and be the offensive coordinator for another 4 or 5 years. But that's crazy that he would waste that much time sort of waiting around. And honestly, with the Colts thing, it's really hard to figure, because there's another one. Josh never really gave a straight answer about that, about why it was. And you heard talk about his family. Well, you know, then this year he puts out, you know, mid-year, well, my family's cool if we move. You know, if we go to the right situation, my family's cool. So, wait, it was family last year and it isn't family this year? I don't think we ever really got a good answer. The one thing I could tell you is maybe that there was some trepidation about Jim Irsay and just the way that organization has been run. Although I would counter that by saying, you know, Irsay may have his personality quirks and ticks, but he's generally stayed out of football business. He's not Jerry Jones holding press conferences after games and having a radio show midweek and doing all that stuff. No, he comes in there and gives bizarre post-game speeches, but he tends not to have anything to do with X's and O's and personnel on your team.
And has not fired coaches quickly. I mean, Jim Caldwell got 3 full years there, and Pagano had a number of years there. And I kind of agree. I would be worried about working for Jim Irsay as well, except the proof is it seems like he's let coaches do what they needed to do, let GMs do what they needed to do, and stayed out of the way and not been impulsive, right?
Oh, for sure. And anybody who would argue otherwise, I mean, you just, that's the proof's in the pudding. Pagano was there probably 2 years longer than he should have been. But he kept him and he stayed with him. I think it was a 5 or 6 years, which is a pretty long time for an organization that clearly kind of got stuck in neutral and was spinning the, you know, the 8-8, 7-9 carousel for a while there. So I actually thought that the Colts job was the job last year to take, and he didn't do it. And this year, I thought the Cleveland job's the job to take, and he couldn't get a taste of it.
Mike Giardi joins us from NFL Network. Final question, Mike. Do you think we see the Patriots yet again in the AFC title game?
I do, but I think this will be the toughest divisional round game they've had since probably the Ravens came into town in 2014-15 when it took the double pass and it took the crazy formations with the offensive linemen, illegal, not illegal receivers that forced them to change the way they identify the rules. I think the Chargers are a very good football team, very capable, very talented. I think this Patriots team has come down a little bit. They're still good, but by the measure of what we've looked at them over the years, they've come down to the pack. The pack's come up a little bit. I think it's going to be a dogfight, but in the end, I'll take a little Brady magic. I'll take the extra week off, maybe getting them to close to 100%, maybe giving Rob Gronkowski a little extra jump in those legs, and then we'll see what happens when they get to the AFC title game, where that is. Because if the Colts knock off the Chiefs, holy crap, you're playing another home game for the AFC title yet again.
Incredible. Mike Giardi joining us this morning here on the show. Follow him on Twitter at Mike Giardi. Follow all of his reports from New England, Boston, the Patriots, everything else for the NFL Network and NFL Media. Always good to catch up, Mike. Happy New Year to you, buddy. Thanks so much for the time this morning, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again.
Thanks to you.
You got it. Mike Giardi joining us this morning here on the show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.